the fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. The truth hurts, especially when he hits you over the head with it. This is the Jeff Blair Show. Sportsnet 590, the fan.
And the 1-1 pitch drilled to right field. That's heading for the fence and hits it on the fly. Base hit. Flying to third base. Getting the wave home is Bonifacio. Here's the relay. He slides. He scores without a tag. A double for Melky, a four-hit game, and the Blue Jays lead the Giants 10-2.
That, of course, the dulcet tones of Jerry Howarth, the voice of the Blue Jays. Jays beating the Giants 10-6 yesterday in the first game of a very brief two-game interleague series. Lots of good from the Jays' point of view. R.A. Dickey seems to have found himself, seems to be in a little bit of a groove right now in a good way, striking out a season-high 10 yesterday. Really liked the way that R.A. Dickey and Henry Blanco worked their way through the Giants' order on a night where, at times, Dickey's knuckleball seemed to be ineffective, made great use of the fastball. Maybe... And I'm going to ask Pat Tabler this as he joins us. Pat, thanks so much for doing this. It seems to me that of all of R.A. Dickey's starts with the Blue Jays, that may have been the start where the fastball and the knuckleball really played off each other really well.
Well, there was a reason, Jeff, that he had to use the fastball just a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking with Gibby during the game, and he was R.A. was dealing again with the fingernail issue.
Split fingernail, yeah.
In the game again last night where he cracked it a little bit or re-cracked it, so he had to use his fastball at times a little bit more. But you're right, and I also thought that once the Blue Jays got ahead 6-0, if he felt like that was bothering him or if he couldn't control his knuckleball the way he wanted to, you can use his fastball a little bit more because you got a little bit more room for error. And he could use that. So he battled his way through. I thought he really, after the first inning, got loose and was throwing it a little bit harder along with his fastball. And a very encouraging sign yesterday from the Blue Jays' number one starter.
Yeah, and I think that, it's funny. I know this drives the stats people nuts, but one of the things R.A. Dickey said after the game is, he said Charlie Huff, who he considers to be something of a spiritual forefather, a knuckleballer, if you want to call it that. So one of the things Charlie Huff told him is, there are nights where you really do pitch to the scoreboard. I know a lot of people don't like hearing that, but R.A. Dickey said, hey, this was one of those nights.
Yeah, and why not? The offense did a great job of getting them 6 runs in the first inning. I mean, how many times have we been able to say that this year?
Mm-hmm.
Where the offense, and it's not like you put it in cruise control. You still stay aggressive, but every pitch isn't like it's the seventh game of the World Series where there's mounting stress on every single pitch. You can go out there and be aggressive and just be yourself. And, if they happen to get a couple of hits, you still have some room for error.
Mm-hmm. With Pat Tabler on the Jeff Blair Show, Barry Zito gave up 12 hits, the most given up by a Giants starter since Kevin Correa gave up 12 in 2008, in July 2008, against the Nationals. The Jays were just locked. They were just locked in on him, weren't they? I mean, it's that simple.
Well, think about the last road trip, the left-handers that they faced. Matt Moore, 98,
mm-hmm.
David Price, 95-97, great hammer, and John Lester.
Yep.
Three lefties that are outstanding left-handers that we face all the time in the American League East. Not taking anything away from Barry Zito, but that the ball must have looked huge to the Blue Jay hitters after facing those three guys on the last road trip, and then you come in and get to face a left-hander who's throwing 85. So that had to make them feel good.
Pat, what are you – I'm going to talk to you about Melky Cabrera in a minute, but I'm kind of intrigued by what I've seen out of Brett Laurie. I think over the last five games, I mean, he hasn't always gotten his hits, but boy, everything he hits, he's squared up.
His approach is so much better since his timing has come back. He's worked really hard with Chad Mottola. And one of the things that he's doing, he's bringing his hands a little bit closer to his body. He's trying to slow down the body just a little bit. That's part of his swing, all the movement and all that kind of stuff. But I was talking to him yesterday, and he says, if I get my front foot down, I think everything is going to be okay, and that really helps my timing. It gets my swing, going. And mm-hmm. right now, he is locked in on everything. His mechanics are fine. He's seeing the ball. And the thing you worry about with young hitters when they don't get hits, when they hit the ball hard, is them getting down on themselves and saying, well, something's not working because I'm not getting any hits. That's the furthest thing from the truth. You just have to stay right there and trust that those balls are going to start falling in, and they all even out. You've heard that in baseball all the time. They always even out. Now, when you're playing and you're hitting, you go, there's no way they even out. But just from where I'm sitting, they always seem to even out. And he'll get his share of hits. But you're right. He is locked in right now. Don't change anything. Continue to work hard. And those balls will start finding holes sooner or later.
Pat, I think it's pretty clear when we talk about Brett Laurie. And I talked to somebody with your organization about this yesterday. And he said, there were circumstances. We had to call him up with Jose Reyes' injury. But I think even some of the Jays people were surprised at just how behind Brett, and I'm not saying this to criticize Brett, I think they were just surprised at how behind he was when he got up here.
He didn't have a spring training. You can say what you want about spring training and all that kind of stuff, but you need it just to get your reps and just to get yourself into game shape and to get to the speed of the game. And Brett did not have a spring training at all. He got hurt, I think, the first week of March. And then I remember seeing him down there and talking to him, and he's like, I can't do anything. I ride the bike to try and keep my legs in shape. I try to do something to keep my wind going. But he didn't do any baseball activities at all. Think mm-hmm. about that with the side. For a month, he was shut down. And then just started hitting off a tee, and that was the type of injury that he had where, one day you wake up and it's gone and you're fine. But until then, you couldn't do anything, and Brett just couldn't do anything for about 4 to 6 weeks. And then all of a sudden, he was hitting off the tee, did some soft toss, did some cage work, gradually got into, one or two games down there?
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, they brought him up. And now you're facing big league pitching? Of course, Superman's going to be behind, mm-hmm. Facing that. I thought Brett Laurie did a great job of keeping his head above water, keeping his sanity about him, and not trying to do too much. And you can see now, how long has he been out? For a month now he's mm-hmm. been getting? You can see it's like his spring training, it's over, and now he's starting to hit bullets all over the ballpark.
Pat Tabler joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. We shift focus to Melky Cabrera for a bit. Four hits against his former team. He's scheduled to have an MRI today on both hamstrings. Pat, I'm beginning to think that, I think in a lot of ways Melky may have been He might have been, even though the numbers weren't there, his approach might have been the most consistent of any Jays hitter from the start of the season to now. Maybe you could throw Edwin in there as well, even though the numbers aren't there. But I'm wondering, even if this MRI checks out okay, if you're John Gibbons, you've got to be thinking about using him as a DH on turf, don't you?
Yeah, I think anywhere. I think you've got to, let like you say, assume that everything is okay and there might be a little bit of a inflammation or a little bit of a strain or something like that, and he can get by DH, and I think he becomes a full-time DH. And what does that do for Adam Lind? I heard some rumblings then about him possibly playing some outfield, some left field, to keep his bat in the lineup
mm-hmm.
with Rajay Davis out. But Melky, when you watch him, you talked about his approach at the plate. Have you seen him in the first 6 weeks of the season ever overswing?
No.
I haven't.
No.
I mean, he is always under control. He's always, stays within himself. He's never, swinging, flailing at pitches. There was a time where pitchers were really pounding him up in the strike zone, and he'd go after it. He's starting to lay off of that pitch, make him bring it down in the strike zone, and the hits are going to come. Just look to his last May. when last year. He had an unbelievable May, something like 50 hits or something like that. So the weather's warming up, so is Melky.
Pat, I appreciate your time.
Okay, anytime, Jeff. We'll see you around the ballpark.
Take care. That is Pat Tabler. He is our Blue Jays analyst on Sportsnet. Telecast, the Jays and the San Francisco Giants play their second game of an all-too-brief two-game interleague series tonight at the Rogers Center. I like having the Giants in town. It's a fun time. We will, of course, have the game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and it'll be on Sportsnet as well. Jays and Giants tonight from the Rogers Center. Jays looking to extend a modest winning streak. But as R.A. Dickey said yesterday, they're playing better baseball. He called it a community win. I haven't heard anybody say it was any other pitcher describe a win as a community win. But more to the point, not just in terms of results, as R.A. Dickey said, we are playing better baseball. So we'll see if that continues against the Giants. Ryan Vogelsong on the mound for the Giants tonight. Ramon Ortiz for the Blue Jays. You know, of course, the Blue Jays have a myriad of pitching concerns when Dirk Hayhurst rolls in for Baseball Central. We'll talk about that. Brandon Morrow has been pushed back. Some interesting little tidbits from Alex Anthopoulos yesterday. Sean Nolan, one of their few remaining bona fide major league prospects in the minors, has put himself on the radar screen for a call-up at some point. He's certainly in line should another catastrophe strike the pitching staff. Marcus Stroman, the first-rounder who's been suspended for 50 games, he gets back at it on May 19th. He's a guy who is, he'll be fast-tracked. When he was drafted last year, a lot of people picked him as the first-round pick, the guy to get to the majors the fastest, certainly the pitcher to get to the majors the fastest. So he's figuring in this. Dustin McGowan hit 96 on the gun in the minors yesterday. So there's Dustin McGowan, although that's not a rotation option. That's more for the bullpen. But there's a lot of moving parts with the Blue Jays pitching. Dirk Hayhurst will help us dissect it when Baseball Central rolls around. But right now, after that Jays win over the Giants, you've probably shifted your focus back to baseball now a little bit. Maybe it was always there while you were watching the Leafs. Want to know, now that the Leafs are out, do the Jays have your attention, or did they have your attention all along? 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. I can be reached on Twitter at GloBlair. All right. The Leafs are done. The Jays are still playing. You know what the Jays' record is. It ain't good. Even though they've been playing relatively decently in the past couple of games, they put themselves in a hole. All you have to do is take a look at the standings. Going into yesterday, the Yankees, the Rays, the Orioles were all in a 7-3 run in the last 10 games. The Red Sox were spinning their wheels. But the point is this, that the Jays went into yesterday's game. The Jays are 9.5 back. The division is not coming back to the Jays. Yeah, it's early, but that's a pretty significant lead to overhaul. So, the question is, now that hockey's done, do the Jays have your attention again? Let me throw another number out at you. The Jays have drawn 606,000 fans to their first 20 home games. Just a tick above 30,000 a game. Last year, after 20 games, they'd drawn about 481. They've not had the greatest schedule. They had that four-game series against the Chicago White Sox. Not a great draw. So the Jays have a shot at 3 million in attendance. You know, depending how the summer plays out, depending what the weather is, all that good stuff. So people are clearly still interested in the team. People are clearly still watching the team. But I want to know if you're still interested. And are you still watching the team? And now that you've had a taste of hockey playoffs for the first time in 9 years, is that going to change the way you watch the Jays? We all have expectations out there. This is a city that has now experienced, albeit temporarily, playoffs. Tony and Maple, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
How are you?
Good, man.
Good. Yeah, I've been following both. Obviously, the Leafs a little bit closer due to the intense playoff battle there.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a very strong Blue Jay fan, always have been. And they'll get more of my attention now because the Leafs are out. You know, do the pregame and postgame shows and listen and follow that. I think, you know, I kind of disagree with you in the sense that, let me put it to you this way. If the Jays, from now until end of September, play 600 ball, you think they're not going to make the playoffs?
Nope. I think they'd have to play a little more than that.
Not
they've
really.
They've got four teams. You've got to remember. Yeah, they have a shot. They would have a shot at getting one of the wild card spots. But the problem is Houston's in the American League this year, and I don't think people realize just how bad that Houston team is, and how much that's almost a freebie for teams in the American League West. I mean, that's almost a gimme. So, you know, yeah, people say, well, if they play this percentage, they got a shot. There's a wild card in the wild card race this year, and that wild card is maybe the worst team in baseball. That's a big.
But look at it.
Big positive for teams in the West.
Boston's spinning their wheels now. Every one of those teams that's ahead of us, the Yankees included, are going to spin their wheels as well at some point.
Yeah, but here's the thing: for the Jays to gain ground on them, they all have to spin their wheels at the same time.
You know what though? You got to look at probability. Okay, if you look at it as one whole of five teams, okay, but if you look at it individually, what's the odds of each one of those teams continuing to play over 600 baseball?
But only two of them are playing over 600 right now. The others are under 600. Like I know what you're getting at, but the point is this: when you get buried this early, and you've got a bunch of teams in front, it's like in any sport. It doesn't matter what the Jays do right now.
Yeah.
They need help, and I can guarantee you that those four teams in front of them, they're not all going to crap out at the same time.
Okay.
If anything, the Yankees are going to get better.
I don't think so.
Well, you know.
And go back.
Go back to
last year's standings. Take a look at the beginning. Who was leading the American League East last year?
Yeah, but that's a different dynamic. It's a different dynamic, and you're also talking about a team that right now has basically got three major league starting pitchers and is without its leadoff hitter and its dominant offensive guy at least till the end of June. So, I mean, yeah, this is the problem when you look at the raw numbers and say, well, if they play this, they can do this. You've got to take the other elements into account as well. And when I look at standings, and I have to admit, I don't generally look at baseball standings till the end of May or the second week of June, but I do know this. When I take a look at the standings right now, there's four teams ahead of them. And that means it's not in your hands. It really isn't. And the numbers are still heavily weighted against the Jays being in a position to contend for a wild card spot. And I really do believe that the presence of the Houston Astros, I mean, look, if the Jays play 750, yeah, then they can make the playoffs. 600? They're going to need help. Mike in Toronto, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, Jeff, thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
You know, I do, I still think it, I am kind of following the Jays a little more now that the Leafs are out of the playoffs, but while they're still in the basement of the division, it's kind of hard to get excited about them. I'd like to see them at least climb out of fifth. But just on your other point that they need help to really get up the division, you know, thankfully the Jays are going to have plenty of opportunity to play the teams above them. And if they can start winning those series, win this New York series this weekend, and then win the Tampa series and the Baltimore series at home when they come back, you know, they're going to be playing a lot of their games against the teams that they need to get above. And so in a lot of ways, if they can beat those teams, it's going to be a win in the Jays' column, and it's going to be an L in the teams that they need to get by.
Well, but again, that on that one particular night, it'll be against that one particular team. And I know what people are saying, and there is an element to that. I mean, there is an element of truth to that. The Jays do have a lot of games left against the rest of the division. But, you know, and I won't even get into the argument of whether or not this looks like a team that's capable of playing 600. I don't think the starting pitching's strong enough to be anywhere near that. The Jays need a lot of help from other teams around them right now. It's entirely possible that given the surprising strength of the American League East, and I think we can call it that. I think a lot of us thought that, you know, Baltimore was a one-hit wonder. Well, that's wrong. A lot of us thought the Yankees were too old, too banged up. They may still be too old. They're certainly still banged up, but they're also, you know, the top of the division or near the top of the division. And the Red Sox, and whatever people, whatever I or anybody else may think about John Farrell, the light has gone on with that pitching staff. And they've got some concerns. They have some bullpen issues. But their starting rotation, John Lester and Clay Buchholz, have really, really blossomed with John Farrell back in the fold. So there's a chance that this division is going to be, you know, everybody's going to be taking two of three from somebody at some point in the season. And there is a chance that the division may come back to the Jays. But I keep pointing this out. The Jays have been in a bit of a run lately, and they're still 9.5 back because the other teams in front of them have also been in a bit of a run. And if you're asking me who in this division has a chance of playing 600 ball, I put every team ahead of the Blue Jays, maybe with the exception of the Yankees, because I'm still not certain about what I'm seeing there. Eddie and Fort Erie, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Buenos dias. Good morning, Jeff.
Buenos dias.
Well, I want to talk about a couple of things. I'm still a Jays fan, no matter what. I've been following the team since, you know, the off season and all that stuff, so even though I've been watching hockey, I'm still into it.
What do you think of where the Jays are right now? What's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Better. Well, you know what? I think I don't know exactly. I mean, like, I think they're playing a little bit better now. I mean, I know they're in last place, but if you kind of sense the momentum going a little bit, they're starting to get a little bit better, you know, at the plate.
They're playing cleaner baseball.
Yes, they are. They're not swinging at everything, and I think that's what separates them right now from where they were at the beginning of the year, where they were swinging at everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to ask you about Chad Jenkins. You talk about being thrown into the fire in your first two starts. He was thrown into the fire in Fenway Park over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think he'll do in New York?
I'm terrified about the possibility of Chad Jenkins pitching in New York, but I was terrified about the possibility of him pitching in Boston. I'd be lying if I told you that I saw an awful lot of Chad Jenkins in spring training or that I've paid particular attention to his career. I haven't. But, talking to a couple of people who do know him, the Jays have some concerns about, and I shouldn't really say concerns. There's a question of does the guy have a plus pitch? Is the guy going to be anything more than a swing man? Is the guy, hey, where does he fit into things? He hasn't, I think it's safe to say, really fulfilled some of the promise, some of the potential the organization saw in him. I frankly, I think right now he's another guy. Is he in the long-term plans of the team? I don't, perhaps, but he needs to be really, really good to stay in those long-term plans. There are, you know, there are pitchers who will be ahead of him when they're healthy again. Guys like Drabek, guys like Hutchison, you know, Luis Perez to a certain degree. But in the meantime, you know, hey, take advantage of your opportunities, kid. But I don't see him as being anything more than a guy who can give you 4 2/3 or 5 innings. I think you get 5 innings out of Chad Jenkins. If you go 5 and fly, I think you're pretty happy with that. 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. John in High Park, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right, the Leafs are out. The Jays appear to have your attention, correct?
Yes. Good speaking with you, Jeff.
Good talking to you, John.
Yeah, I just would, you know, my personal opinion about the Jays, just they're going to need a Boston Bruins miracle to finish it out, you know.
Yes.
You know, really, it's going to take a stunning collapse.
Yeah, the first 40 games of this have seemed like the last 10 minutes of Game 7. The first 40 Jays games seemed like the last 10 minutes of Game 7.
Absolutely drawn out into like 100 innings.
Exactly.
But what has actually kind of a thought popped in my head, I keep, I'm a pretty big RA fan, and he keeps breaking these nails, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a...
It happens.
Yeah, it's you know what? It's not even it's like a crack. It's not even a split. It's a crack. It's a crack in the nail, and it affects his grip.
Yeah, it affects his grip. Well, it's funny because I'm a musician. I use it lightly because I'm a drummer, and most people may not consider. But I do hang around with people that play guitar, and a lot of guys I know that are playing kind of finger style folk stuff, they get their fingernails dremeled, filed down at like a nail salon, and they get fused. Like an acrylic nail into their own nail, and they're pretty much indestructible. Now, would that be illegal? Is that performance enhancing? What is that?
Performance. You know what? We need Hayhurst in here. Now Hayhurst is going to be looking to pit people's nails. He's already looking for signs of glistening moisture on various parts. That doesn't sound right. He's always looking for signs of grease on pitchers' arms. Now he's going to be looking for fingernails. I'm going to ask him. I don't know, because I do know that when A.J. Burnett, if you remember, caught his finger. God, I mean, I laugh every time I think of this because it's A.J. Burnett. But basically, he caught his fingernail in the door of a Range Rover going to spring training. And he went to a salon, and all I remember him saying is they, quote, unquote, did something with my nail. Now, I don't know if there would have been an acrylic, an insert or anything like that, but I'm going to ask Hayhurst about that. Because I do know guys, I'm trying to think of the pitcher that I covered in Montreal. I want to say Tim Scott, a reliever. He, like, loaded up a nail polish, a nail hardener on his nails. But I'll ask Hayhurst.
Because, you know, like, if you can get, you know, a muscle in your leg inserted in, when you get Tommy John,
get a fingernail transplant.
Or I could get a horse hoof put in your fingernails.
I tell you what, John, I'm gonna talk to Hayhurst about this. We'll discuss what pitchers do with their nails. That's a great topic. I mean, what do guys do? You know, the whole Moises Alou thing, urinating on his hands to make the skin tough. All that. There's lots of tricks. Deer antler spray. Got to deal with Andrew Wiggins. It's a pretty big deal when a Canadian kid sort of holds the sports world in the palm of his hand the way this kid did yesterday. Andrew Wiggins announcing that he was going to Kansas. And let's face it, he's going to Kansas for a year before he goes to the NBA. Jack Armstrong, our NBA insider, the coach, will join us. We'll talk about Andrew Wiggins, and I'm going to ask Jack. I keep hearing we're going to have a Brian Colangelo announcement any day that either Brian Colangelo is going to be fired or that he's going to quit. What's up with that? Announce it already. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Prices like no other, from a club like no other, The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Baseball Central with Dirk Hayhurst and yours truly is just around the corner. The Jays will play the San Francisco Giants tonight, second game of a two-game series. Jays beat the Giants 10-6 yesterday, their third straight win. Want to find out from you if the Jays have your attention now that the Leafs are out, and if they don't, what the hell's wrong with you? No, if they don't, what do they have to do to get your attention back? Jack Armstrong will also join us to talk about Andrew Wiggins' decision to go to Kansas. Tom and Waterloo, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, still with them, Jeff.
Still with them? You're not giving up?
Still with them. I did some 10-game sets. Right now, let's say we had a 4-10 set. We're at 16, which puts us 8 under, which is the hard part. But we got 12 sets of 10 left. If we go 6-4, there's plus 12, which puts us plus 4, and that's how hard it's getting. If we go 7-3, that's plus 24, So that's how hard it's getting, but it could be done. 6-4, 7-3 in 10 game sets, 6.5, say, for 10.
Yeah,
so,
and I don't...
Mathematically, we're still there, but it's going to be hard.
Yeah, I don't see this team having the pitching to get it done right now. I mean...
Well, yeah, it's looking tough, but, mathematically, it's still there.
All right.
It's still early enough to be done.
Appreciate the call, Tom. Tom's keeping the faith. Brian in North Bay, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Morning, Jeff. How are you?
Good, Brian. So you're a Leafs and Jays fan, it says here on my handy little screen. You're still bullish on the Jays.
Now that I'm allowed to play with sharp instruments again, my wife kept me away from anything that was suicidal over the last 48 hours.
I've got to believe that she wasn't the only wife doing that, believe me.
But then she started to leave a few out there, and I thought, hold on, what's the message?
So, what did you get her for Mother's Day? Did you slip up with the Mother's Day gift?
No, I was a good boy. Did everything as a man should do. But you know what? The Leafs are moving forward. Let's just say we don't have the pedigree. We will get pedigree as long as we keep getting into the playoffs, and it can only get better.
That's true. What about the Jays? What do you like about them so far, and what concerns you about them?
I like the potential, Jeff. The sum of the parts should be better than the results.
Yeah.
And, whilst the hockey was on and we're getting all the Sportsnet adverts too, I wasn't liking the adverts, to buy Jays tickets. I wasn't liking this posturing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the Encarnacion advert where he does the big home run swing and sits and gawks at it? And I thought, I wonder if the first 30 games have been a humbling experience. I wondered about the chemistry of all these big shots coming in. I was more interested before the season started at how this was all going to gel.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if this sort of, we don't know the in-house dynamics. Mm-hmm. I think you know where I'm going with this. I'm not saying there's infighting, but just everybody swinging for the fences to show everybody else how good they are. And I wonder if that's out of the system. And Tom was doing some math. I've got some simpler math. 120 games to go. We have to go 80-40, and even then, we don't hit 100 games.
Yeah, you want to get 100 wins. Well, I think you can get, I think maybe 93, and again, it depends because, I still don't know what to make of the East, and God, Houston's so bad, I don't know how they're going to factor in the equation as well, but... I mean, you've got to be able to get to 93, 94, 95 to have a discussion about it. And, I can see this team playing better. I can see this team playing a lot better. I mean, I'm seeing signs of it. We saw last night. But playing a lot better may not be enough. And that's probably the biggest issue. Always good to hear from North Bay. Great to hear from the coach, Jack Armstrong. How you doing, Jack? Hey, Jack, how are you, man?
Good morning, Jeff. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing real well. I'm probably not as good as Andrew Wiggins, to be honest, but I don't know how many people are. Let me ask you this. Do you like the decision that he made yesterday?
Yeah, because I think when you look at the fact that Ben McLemore is going to be going into the NBA draft and drafted quite high, the opportunity is going to be there for him to get significant minutes and significant opportunity to touch the ball and be a big part of what Kansas is doing next year. And I also think when you look at Kentucky and, you know, particularly North Carolina, I think there's a little bit more of a hype factor at places like that and media pressure just on the East Coast,
mm-hmm.
versus, you know, kind of being out in the plains a little bit in Kansas, where you can have a little bit more of a reasonable lifestyle and an opportunity to grow and expand your game. And I think still against very, very good competition in the Big 12, they play a great non-conference schedule. Bill Self has done a terrific job in his career throughout of preparing guys for the NBA. And I just think if he's comfortable with the fit, he knows better than anybody. I just think that it works for him. And quite frankly, I think when you look at Kentucky, I think he might have gotten lost in the shuffle there a little bit with so many guys that have immense talent that I don't think his talents would truly be appreciated. And I think in a place like Carolina, they have a tendency to play really fast, and I think that's good. But I think in terms of preparation for the pros, I think Kansas is a real good fit for him.
Jack Armstrong joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Andrew Wiggins made his decision yesterday, the most highly touted high school player, a native of Thornhill, grew up in Toronto. I'm sorry, native of Toronto, grew up in Thornhill, has decided to go to Kansas. Is Bill Self a good coach? Because let's face it, he's going to spend a year here, Jack. Can he learn enough from Bill Self in a year that it's going to further his development as a player?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, I think that, you know, if I had to pick the coaches that he was looking at right now, I would have to say Bill Self and Roy Williams on my list in terms of skill development and player development and kind of teaching them the entire aspect of the game and how hard you got to play it, how well you got to play it on both ends.
Mm-hmm.
John Calipari's got experience as a pro coach. I just think that environment right now, and you could see it last year, was toxic. There were too many guys that were there as individuals, and they didn't have the true buy-in for the team concept. And I don't know how that's all going to shake out next year. They're going to have, you know, a top five team again, and you know they'll roll out the balls and they'll be exceptionally good. But I just watching Kansas and what Andrew Wiggins has in his game, I think he'll be a real good fit for them.
You know, I know there's absolutely no way the Raptors can, you know, unless somehow they can convince the NBA to rig the draft. I know there's no guarantee they're going to get Andrew Wiggins or anything like that. But Jack, is his presence out there, his possible presence out there, is there, I don't even know how to ask this, but I mean, you know, people are going to want the Raptors to get Andrew Wiggins. I mean, they are. And I don't know how that's going to work out, but how good a player could he be for, you know, a franchise that's on the cusp a bit? Like, is he a guy that do you think could come in and immediately make an impact?
Well, you know, you look at two examples. You know, you look at Derrick Rose playing in his hometown in Chicago, and Chicago had mathematically next to nothing chance of getting him, and they won it.
Mm-hmm.
And then LeBron James playing in Cleveland. You got to be a special guy, a really special guy, to play in your hometown, particularly as a pro. You know, it's one thing as a collegiate player. And today's hype machine with the internet and all that and social media, it's hard enough doing that as a collegiate player. But at the pro level, you got to have thick skin, and it's got to be handled appropriately. I give the Bulls a lot of credit for how they handled Derrick Rose. Cleveland, I thought, did a pretty good job with it, though I think they allowed it to get out of hand too much at the end. But I think for a guy like Andrew Wiggins, it would be a sensational opportunity for him and a great opportunity for the Raptors. I just don't know from a win-loss perspective and ping-pong balls and all that. I don't, you know, none of us know how that'll all shake out in 12 months. But Man, oh, man, it would definitely be a huge boost for their organization. Whether he can come in as a rookie and you know, help his team get to the next level, I don't know yet. I got to see him at the collegiate level. I think he's got a chance to be really special, but I want to see him at the collegiate level to see what exactly he can do and how that all fits. But there's no doubt in my mind that, you know, he's going to be the top pick next year, and if he's not the top pick, he'll be number two or three.
Jack, before we let you run, of course, we've been anticipating some sort of word about Brian Colangelo's immediate future. We know he's met with Tim Leiwicki. You know, people have written a couple of things. Basically, a decision's been made. It just hasn't been announced. Or the other school of thought seems to be that MLSE may be kind of waiting for Brian to resign and, you know, not give him the extension and wait for him to resign. Where do you think this is going? And I mean, we need an answer really soon, don't we?
I agree. And I honestly don't know where it's going. And I will say this, though. If you're, again, if you're, I don't care whether you're a fan of Dwayne Casey or you're a detractor. I don't care if you're a fan of Brian Colangelo or a detractor. I just think at some point in time, these guys have given their heart and soul and their blood, sweat, and tears to the organization. And again, you could argue all you want about the results. I just think we're in the people business.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys, I think it's a difficult thing for them and, more importantly, their families to be put in this position where you're basically in purgatory, where you're just kind of waiting and waiting. And, you know, I don't know whether it's paralysis by analysis or this is a matter of wanting to make sure we dot all the I's and cross all the T's. And we're sure about things, but at some point in time, hopefully sooner rather than later in the next 48 to 72 hours, I just think it's only fair for those guys to be given a direction one way or the other. And I'll say this, you know, back in March, I had a few NBA people say to me, hey, Toronto is a market. They have to be proactive rather than reactive.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to make a move on a GM and a coach, you should make it in March. Not in, you know, later, because you want to be first in line if you're going to try to go get a real top-notch coach or try to get a top-notch executive. You got to be out ahead of everybody rather than being part of now a mix. If you move the coach out, you know, you got a half dozen coaching jobs open. Now you're just one of six or seven. And if you have an executive job open, again, you're just in the mix with other people. So, again, I would hope and pray that they have a plan in place. I'm sure they do. I just think when it's all said and done, in terms of fairness to Brian and fairness to Dwayne, I just think it's only right to let them know one way or the other, are you in or are you out?
Jack, I appreciate you doing this as always. Thanks so much.
Jeff, my pleasure. Have a good day, buddy.
You too. That is Jack Armstrong, our NBA and our Raptors insider as well. That is it for the Blair Show. Dirk Hayhurst is here. Baseball Central next on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.